Welcome to The Wine Muse. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with my co-host, William Pollard from Wild for Washington Wine. And this is the third Thursday of the month, so we are talking about wine, specifically today, port. And we're going to be tasting some from the Quevedo Winery over in Portugal. And we're going to be talking to Oscar Quevedo. But right now I have William on the phone, and we're going to just chat for a little bit before we bring Oscar on. How are you doing, William?
I'm doing great, Linda. How are you today?
I'm doing very well.
And Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you. 2015. We did another a whole year of wine tasting last year.
I'm looking. Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Whole year. Really? Mm-hmm. Had some great shows. And those are available in archives, by the way. Did you make any New Year's resolutions?
I did, actually. I've posted my resolutions to my blog, and I'm resolving to learn more about the wines of Greece and specifically the island of Crete.
Wow. Are you reading the Odyssey?
I'm not, but I do have a quote from Homer on the blog. And actually, that's a great idea. Greece is full of a rich historical culture. It's an amazing place when you start. I started looking at it for the post that I did, and I found a wealth of poetry and a history of wine that goes back thousands of years. The island of Crete is supposedly the birthplace of the god Zeus. So there's this rich culture in Greece. And the reason I've resolved to focus on Greece and Crete in particular is that my grandmother's second husband was from the island of Crete, and he's passed away. And I felt it was time to learn more about this man I actually knew very little of. So.
Oh, really? Did you love him quite a bit, too? I mean, he must have inspired you to do this.
I knew very little about the man because he was very private.
Oh, okay.
So the little that I do know really comes from the stories that my grandmother used to tell us. And she would tell us things that he never in his life would tell us or probably even knew that she told us. So it's
the interesting
sort of my
stories,
way of,
the good stories.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn a little
what
bit
you really
more
want
about
to know.
What made him tick and why he was the way he was. So I refer to him as an enigma.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll have to read that post.
Yeah,
Sounds fascinating.
All right.
Port was a new topic for me, and I'm glad we took it on this month because sometimes I don't realize how ignorant I am on a topic until we actually dive into it. You know, you think you know something about it, a smattering, and you think that's, you know, great. Then you get into it, you delve into it, you realize, wow, I didn't know any of this.
Well, and port is a beverage that has not traditionally been an American beverage. It's been a very English sort of thing.
And Oscar really is the one who gave us the most information. He's a fascinating individual himself.
They're the new generation of winemaking and wine marketing. And I've met Oscar a couple of times at wine conferences, and you know, people said, you need to meet this guy. He's from Portugal, and he makes these wonderful wines. You need to meet him. He's just the nicest, sharpest guy you'll meet, and he truly is.
He is. He's genuine, articulate, good representative of this new generation of wine lovers.
He's articulate, he's sharp, and he's passionate, and I just like his energy a lot.
Let's go ahead and just get that interview started.
Welcome. Today, Linda and I are pleased to welcome to the show Oscar Quevedo, a port wine producer in the Douro region of Portugal. Porto Quevedo was created as a brand of port in 1991 and continues a family tradition of producing premium Portuguese wine. Welcome to the show, Oscar. How are you today?
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very good, William. I'm great, Linda. Thank you for this invitation. It's a pleasure to be in your show, and I hope we can help your followers to better understand what is Portuguese wine and what is port.
You know, we really both enjoyed the wines that we received, and I was truly impressed, to be honest, absolutely impressed with the quality of your wines.
Thank you very much. That's a good beginning.
That's the most important part. Now, Oscar, this is a family. Your winery is a family business, and you just had a little boy. We were just talking about this before we started the show. And, I mean, just months ago, you had your first baby born, right?
Right. We had it 3 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was during the harvest. It was, yeah, it was not the timing was bad. We have to think about that next time we have a, if you have a next baby, we have to better forecast dates. My sister was not happy at all with our new baby coming right on time, right in the middle of the harvest.
Yeah, that's a little inconvenient. What did you do? Strap him on and get back out to harvest.
But I think that when Claudia, my sister, saw Mark, everything was forgiven and she was happy again.
Nothing some good port will not solve, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
we'll get into the harvest and everything earlier. I do want to start with the basics because port, and we're going to do port for dummies today, okay? Everything's going to be the most basic. What is it? What? How do you make it? What makes it good? What makes it bad? But first of all, port is a wine, correct?
Correct. Port is a style of a fortified wine made in Portugal for over 300 years. What it means being a fortified wine? It means that we have, to make wine, we need only one ingredient, which is grapes. Grapes will be transformed in wine by a chemical process that we call fermentation. The fermentation will transform the sugar of the grape in alcohol. If we let the yeast, which is the microorganism responsible for the fermentation, to eat all the sugar in the grape, in the must. And if you let the yeast transform everything in alcohol, we will have what we call a still wine. It can be either white, red, or it can also be a rosé. Port goes into the group of fortified wines. What does it mean? It means that we not only have grapes to make it, we also have wine spirit. And we have the wine spirit because we want to stop the fermentation. We want to kill the yeast to keep part of the sweetness of the grape. Port is sweeter than wine. And it's sweeter than wine not because we add sugar, but because we keep part of the fructose, part of the grape sweetness in the wine. And we end up with about 19 to 20% wine, which is made with 80% grapes and about 20% wine spirit with 77% alcohol. Does this make sense?
Yes. Now, but when you say wine spirit, what is it exactly? What are you adding to it?
Wine spirit is distilled wine. So to make vodka, we distill potato juice. To make rum, we use sugar cane. To make whiskey, we go for cereals or distilled beer, basically. To make wine spirit, we distill wine. We can separate the wine is made out of alcohol. Well, the constitution of wine is alcohol and water. If we distill, we can separate the water from the alcohol and we can concentrate this alcohol. Then we have this spirit. One of the most well-known spirits, the wine spirit, is the cognac made in the region of Bordeaux. So we use this spirit. We distill the wine to make a spirit and then we put it back in the wine to make port.
So cognac is a wine spirit?
Cognac is a wine spirit.
It's brandy.
It's brandy, exactly. The basic definition for wine spirit is brandy. But brandy is already something that you can drink while we can drink with about 40% alcohol. Wine spirit, when it's raw, when you just finish, when you get it, it's about 77% alcohol. Wow. Something that you cannot drink on itself.
So you wouldn't want to try that.
No.
Okay. You can smell it, but it's really, really rough.
Okay. Now, if you choose a different type of wine spirit, then that will, I imagine, dramatically affect your port product.
It does. Correct.
So do you do that? Do you choose different types of wine spirits depending on the port you're making?
We do. We do, Linda. That's a very good question, actually, because it It's not the same to use a wine spirit made with wine from a white wine or a red wine. And also, wine spirit made with wine from different regions varies very much. In general, in the port industry, we use wine that is made from the south of Portugal, also a little bit from Spain and from France. Wines from the Douro are, in general, too expensive to make wine spirit. Mm-hmm. Only the best quality will be made with wines from the Douro. And but it can change a lot, especially if we let the wine spirit age for a couple of years. Then we get something much more soft, smooth, and it will improve when we integrate with the must to make port.
Hmm.
That's very fascinating. Now, let's get into the brass tacks of what can be called port and what can't be. this is very well regulated. And to be called a port, it has to be from Portugal, correct?
Correct. So if I can give you a one-minute history about port, the origin of port goes back to the half of the 17th century. We're talking about 1650. In one of the many wars between England and France, and they had a lot of wars, but in one of those, the British Crown forbade imports of wines from France, mostly Burgundy and Bordeaux. So the British merchants, as wise business people, went down to Portugal and to Spain to get these wines to supply to the market. What was the problem? The journey between Portugal and England was much longer than from France to England. So the wine that at the time was transported in ships would get in boats, big boats, would get in very bad conditions to England. So they start to add the wine spirit, this brandy, on the top of the barrels to preserve it as a way of preserving. And it was being shipped from the city of Porto, which in Portuguese means port or dock. So the origin of port wine, it's in the name of the city where it was shipped from. So that's why we have to preserve this as a wine from this origin. Otherwise, if you are making port everywhere in the world, we would never respect its origin. It took some time for the European Union and the US to go into an agreement for the denomination of origin for port. But since, if I'm not wrong, 2005, new labeling is no longer allowed to have new labeling from the US is no longer allowed to have the name port to avoid confusion.
Aha. That's pretty recent. So the English then they were the first ones to really develop the port because they were getting wine shipped from Portugal and they were having to fortify it. They were the first ones to really then appreciate and develop it, the English countrymen.
Yes, they were the first, and we still have some British families that are involved nowadays in the port business. We have a lot of brands. Some are already owned by another company, some Portuguese, some Spanish, whatever, French. But a lot of British English names on the wine trade.
Interesting.
Now you're a family-owned winery, correct?
I mean,
your
correct,
sister
correct.
And your parents and your grandfather, is that correct?
Correct, William. Our grandfather died, the last one from my father's side died in 2009. And it was because of him that I decided to join my family business. But we are still 100% family owned, and my sister is the winemaker. My father is still running the company. He's now 68, giving more and more work, putting more and more responsibility and work on our shoulders, on my sister's and mine. Mm-hmm. But he's still involved in the daily work.
Okay. Now you have quite a few ports on your and olive oil. I noticed on your website, and so you guys. You have a variety of port options. One is a tawny, and we have one of those tonight to taste. And then the other is a late bottled vintage. Can you tell me what's going on differently and how you make these,
sure.
And really all the different ports you offer?
So we have the white, the rosé, and then we have the red ports. In the red ports, we can divide in two categories, in the ruby style and in the tawny style. Ruby, because they these kind of ports have a more fruity, more fresher, and more winey approach, and that are ports that go to bottle very young, and that can age and develop in bottle. In the category of the rubies, we can include the Ruby, the Reserve Ruby, the LBV, which is the one we are going to taste tonight, and the Vintage Port, which is the most expensive, the difficult to achieve.
Yes.
And something technically very, very, very difficult to make.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a very concentrated. Think about the late bottle vintage, but with more concentration, more of everything. And it's a port that is ready. It really reaches its full potential after 20, 30, or 40 years.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, it's why we it's not easy to get the quality of the grapes to make vintage port in big quantities. And helps to rise the price. So these are the rubies, because of it of their color, the ruby color.
And then we have they don't touch wood ever in there.
Well, they may touch wood, but very short period of time and big wood tanks to avoid oxidation. We want to preserve this red ruby color. We don't want the color to start fading towards brown or brick or whatever, which is what we have in the Tonys. So Tony is a barrel-aged port with a brick brown color. The name Tony is given by an owl that lives, guess where? In England. And this owl has brick, orange feathers, and because of that we call it the Tony style, because these ports after some years in barrel will start developing a brick, a more orange brown color instead of the ruby. So old port starts by being red in color, ruby in color if you want. The Tonys will get the brown color, the orange color after aging for a certain period of time in barrel. So this slow oxidation will change the flavors and change the structure of the port into a more nutty style, more smoky. It's a port in which we have a little bit of fruit left, and we have these almonds, we have the chocolate, so more secondary flavors. Also, the tannins get more mellow, and that helps a lot. In the moment of consumption, if you look for something very easy to drink, a Tony is probably something that you will prefer. Actually, the biggest consumer of port is France, and French, which is interesting, being one of the biggest wine producers in the world. And in France, they drink port as an aperitif, mostly Tony port. Almost don't touch the ruby style, while in England, the first country that's really start importing loads of port, they almost only drink the ruby style. A lot of LBV, a lot of vintage port. And the US, it's divided. The US likes the young vintage port, these kind of fruit bombs with a lot of tannins.
Fruit bombs. Really,
really complex, dense. exactly, Linda. But also like the more mature, more smoother, but richer Tonys. So it's an interesting market because there is no a clear pattern in the consumption of port.
We pride ourselves on being difficult. In a very uneducated way, I must say.
we have to double our efforts to educate, you know.
Yes. What should we like? I'm just kidding. I really appreciated the Tonys for some reason, and I'm not sure why, but maybe it's the oak and the way it smooths out the tannins. This one particularly very, very well balanced and creamy, and yet. It has so
could
much,
be.
Yeah, but yet it has so much flavor as well. So you said the French are the ones who appreciate the tawny. English like the rubies. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, there is no correct answer for what's better, ruby or tawny, or what's the which one is the best. Right. My sister is a big tawny lover. She likes old tawnies, and I prefer the ruby style. I like more LBVs and vintage. So there is no answer for what is better. It's just what is the best. It's just really up to you.
Some are better for different things, too. You said that the French like it as an aperitif. So they drink correct. The tawnies before a meal. But then the English, do they primarily like theirs as a dessert wine?
Yeah, and with cheese and definitely with some food and with a Stilton. The Stilton is a quite intense cheese. So they need something that has some tannins to go well with. Also, the ruby style is great with chocolate. If you like chocolate, it's a great way of pairing chocolate. Chocolate is very difficult to pair in terms of beverages. I don't know if you have that experience, but you need something with strong tannins. Chocolate has a lot of tannins, and the ruby style LBV and vintage port is a great friend of chocolate.
I've also paired the ruby with a beef shepherd's pie, and I thought that was a wonderful pairing.
What's that?
I've paired the ruby port with a beef shepherd's pie. I thought that was the sweet and the savory for me were a wonderful match.
That's very it's getting very popular now to have the ruby styled LBVs and vintage with a meal. And some spicy food, some beef. It's absolutely a great combination.
Well, maybe we're just becoming a little more flexible these days. Because I always used to think about both the tawny and the ruby as being a dessert wine or a cigar wine.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think we that's one of the problems of port when in when we talk about the consumption. We don't have to smoke to be able to enjoy port.
That's a good thing, since hardly anyone smokes anymore.
Me neither. So we can only have a good conversation. I'll drink my glass of port when I'm reading a book, or when I'm reading my book, or when I'm watching a movie on TV, and it tastes so good. If I have a friend, well, that's a plus. And we may grab some food or not, but it goes well definitely with what we were talking about. We have to simplify a little bit the consumption the moment that we consume port. We don't need something very special. We don't need special glasses. We don't need special friends. Just have to be in the mood to enjoy.
Okay, so you don't need a special glass. I always pour it in my best crystal, though. It's just like I got to get my best crystal out when I have port, and maybe I need to stop that. I need to.
So no, wine glass works for port. If you have a port glass, that's perfect. If you have a wine glass, well, use that one. You don't need anything else.
Right. Okay. So, Oscar, I do have a question related to, you know, once you pull the cork and open the bottle and then close it back up again, how long do you recommend holding the bottle and, you know, to consuming it? I mean, is it good for a month or 2 months? I mean,
it depends on which style we are talking about. As the tawny style aging barrel, it has a lot of contact with oxygen. So the flavors are already the fruit fresh flavors are gone. We have these nutty flavors, more complex, more intense, more secondary. So when you open the bottle, oxygen is already something that the tawny already knows. So it doesn't really change that much. It takes a lot of time to spoil a bottle of tawny port after opening. So I mean, 1-2 months for a tawny, it's not a problem. But if you talk about a ruby, like the LBV or the vintage port, it's different. When you open a bottle, we are putting the oxygen in contact with wine. And it's wine that never had contact with oxygen before, or very little. So the fruit flavors will start to slowly disappear and fade away. So, and the color is starting to change as well. So when you talk about LBV and vintage port, go for a few days to 2 weeks. From a few days to 2 weeks.
Okay. But it's not a problem for me.
Exactly.
You do need some friends, though, if you're going to accomplish that.
You should.
So what would you say if somebody – in fact, this question was brought up to me because I knew this we were going to be interviewing you, and so I had some friends over. And one of the questions was – there was a gentleman at the dinner who said that his father is getting really – just loves port now. And he was so he's trying to find gifts for him. Since he doesn't know as much about port, he's just trying to figure it out. So if somebody does have a somebody who's really loving port, and you want to get them a really thoughtful gift of port, what would you lead them to?
Well, a collector is normally someone that loves to drink vintage port. So if you want to give a good gift, go for a bottle of vintage port. Try to see on your local store if you have something already a little bit mature, old, like a 10 or 15, 20 years old bottle of vintage port. If not, go for something younger so you can put in his cellar and collect it and age it. If someone that he may prefer the Tony style, then go for a 20-year-old, a 10-year-old, or even a 40 if you can find it. 40s are very, very hard to find. It's not easy to find them. But I think something that is 10-year-old or older, it's already a good gift.
That's good advice. Now, I read on your website, and you have a blog and a website, and you're very social media savvy, so anyone can find you on the internet and connect with you. But the you were born in 1983?
Correct.
And that just happened to be a really good year for port.
That's true, Linda. That's true. You know, you have to know when you come out. It's not random. It shouldn't be random.
And I noticed, and what age were you when you started to drink port?
One, very two. Honestly. I don't remember that age, but I will tell you the first memories I have. My grandparents from my father's side lived in the same town where I used to live and when I grew up, and where my parents still live. So it was I very often used it to visit my grandparents, I guess 3 or 4 times a week, and. In not every time I visit my grandfather, but sometimes he would tell me to come to follow him, take me to the dining room where he had this old bottle of port, put a little bit in a port glass, give it to me, and then in the end would say, "Shh, don't say anyone." I was probably about 5, 6 years old. And I start understanding the last part, the don't tell anyone, when I was probably 14. And I'll tell you why. I was having lunch or dinner with my parents, and I was explaining, you know, yesterday when I went to visit grandpa, he gave me a little bit of port. And my mom looks at me. Not very happy. She was really upset. I said, "What? What is that?" I said, "Well, I have seen there is a bottle of port, but did you taste it?" "Well, no, no, no."
So how do you define gave? gave me. Just gave me the bottle to hold.
I hold the bottle for 3 seconds.
I didn't even think about drinking it. So the 1983 bottle, that was a good year. And I think you were saying that you drink a bottle of 1983 every year on your birthday.
Well, I try to. If I no, I definitely try to. It's a good way of celebrating. 83, when was first bottled, was considered a good year, but not outstanding. And what happens is that it has been aging very well in bottle. And it's improving, it's still improving, it's going up. It still has this fruit character. The tannins are getting very ripe and elegant now. So it has been drinking very well, and the price is still affordable. We're talking about a bottle of port that you can buy under 100 $1,000. Mm-hmm. For a 30-year-old, 31 years old, or 32 now, it's still interesting. Well, we can say that the people from 83 are a little bit like the wine. So at the beginning, they were not very good, but they're getting better and better.
That's great. So that would be a good investment then for somebody who wants to buy a gift wine, possibly, the 83.
83 or yeah, it's still a good investment, and better investment is probably buying vintage port and primeur or during the first years after release. The quantities of vintage port produced nowadays are much lower than what we used to produce in the 70s and in the 80s. The producers are focusing more and more on quality rather than quantity, and we have probably seen it on the Wine Spectator's magazine. But the port wine has been on vintage port has been on the top lists of the best year, the best wines from every year. 2011 was a fantastic year for port, and we have a huge number of vintage port rated under 95 points on Wine Spectator, for instance. So it's a signal that port wine is the quality of port is going keep going high, and it's a great investment when you can buy a bottle of vintage port for less than $50 or $60. And now, from 2011, you certainly won't find anything. It's more expensive now than that. But every 3 or 4 years, we release a new vintage port. And then it's probably the time to invest a little bit in vintage port. And or if you don't invest, if you don't want to make a collection, just keep some bottles away and drink it in 15 or 20 years.
Oh, so you do. If you get, say, you get the 2011, you need to put it away for 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. To wow. Fully understand that port, yes, yes.
So that gives you something to live for. You're like, I can't get sick and die. I've got to live to taste my port.
It's a good way of negotiating with God in the end. You know,
that's right.
I can't die yet.
That's right. I've got a lot of port to taste. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing to do. So you said 2011, you probably can't even get that for $50 anymore. You said
no. When we first released it, we were talking about 60. I think that in our case, we are now on 100. So
wow.
Yeah, and it was a good investment for 2 years for someone that bought. And Primor in 2 years ago, in 2013.
Yeah. That's a wonderful investment. And yeah. We're in the wrong business. We need to get a stock and market, stock market, go into port. on your website, you had some of the vintage ports. Which ones do you offer on? Do you offer the 2011 or?
No, we are sold out on 11. Okay. We are what we have a little bit of 2010, which is. In general, underrated by the press, because it's very close with 2011, and it's on the shade of 2011. It happens very often. I can give you another years like 96. It's very close to 95, mm-hmm. And the same for 2001, for instance. But 2010, it's an interesting port. It's probably you can buy it for 30% less than 2011, and it has a long leave ahead. So it's an example. We will release in 2015. We plan to release a 2013 vintage port. It's going to be the newest port on the market. There is some interesting information now that we are getting into the vintage port that I want to share with you. In general, when we talk about vintage port, we talk about a very special year that we produce, as I told you before, every 3 or 4 years. But when you have something special that it's produced from a single vineyard and that we think that it's worth to bottle, we do it as a single quinta. Quinta is the port is named for vineyard. And the single quinta vintage port is in general a port that trades on discount for 25 to 30% less. It makes it more affordable, and is something that will not have the aging potential of a regular declaration, but is something that you can have a vintage port style with a high quality for a lower price.
Okay, so you're just trading the longevity of it.
Exactly.
So you won't live as long if you buy that one. Just that's years of your life you're trading, that's it.
It's a way of bringing every year something to the market in very, very small quantities, but at least if you have a baby born in 2015 or 2014, and it was not a top year for port, at least you can have a kind of a second best.
A second best. No, I see what you mean. And that sometimes second best is good enough, that's for sure. Especially like the 2011s are gone, so that's not a choice anymore. Well, this has been interesting. William, do you have any more questions before we drink our wine?
Well, I just wanted to point out to listeners that you also produce still wines, white and red. Is that correct?
Correct, William.
And so if someone is interested in Portuguese wines, and perhaps if they don't appreciate port, there are other options as well with Quevedo that you could actually get a white or a red still wine.
Absolutely.
But how could they not appreciate port? Anyway, well, we won't even go to that. Now, so they can go to the website, quevedoportwine.com. They can also type in your name and find you, and we'll link to it on this show as well. Mm-hmm. And your wines are really easy to find here in the United States, so they have good distribution here. That was good to see.
That's true, and we have it online through Flickinger, so if people want to buy, I think Flickinger works from Chicago. They ship it, I think, pretty much everywhere, so it's a way to find our wines and ports.
Nice. Well, Oscar, it's been fun talking to you.
Oh, true pleasure.
I've learned so much today.
So the next thing for both of you, Linda and William, and for your listeners, is to come to Portugal and plan a vacation in Portugal. It will truly amaze you, the diversity of landscapes that we have. The food is still very traditional and authentic, and the vineyards are beautiful. The wines are, well, drinkable. So that's the next step. I hope I can see you in Portugal.
Oh, we'll be happy to
show you around.
Yes.
I'd love to as well.
Okay, let's make a toast. Let's make a toast to a trip to Portugal and a cellar full of great reserve port and a long life to enjoy them in. There you go. Cheers.
Salut.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Oscar Quevedo from quevedoportwine.com. Quevedoportwine.com, and that's Quevedo, portwine.com. They also sell olive oil, which William and I have been talking about loving. We would love to get our hands on some of that.
I would.
So, yeah.
There's an olive oil shortage going on, so it might be difficult.
Is there really? Oh, I think you said that before. The interesting thing about talking to our guests is these are pretty long. That was a pretty long interview, but it seems like it's 5 minutes when you're talking to them. And then we didn't even begin to touch on all the things we could talk about with port.
I had the strong impression that Oscar was just getting warmed up. and certainly I was starting to feel like we were going to go in a lot of different directions too, because there's so much to talk about. And it is, as far as the perception of Portugal in the world and the wine world, I mean, it is kind of like one of those the places where something is created from, you know, intercultural, cross-cultural connections, and then the need. And then as you mentioned earlier, the conflict with England and with France really created port. War created port, or an embargo created port. So that's, you know, really, really interesting and fascinating. And you know, it took me a while to actually begin to appreciate port style wines, just because they are sweeter, they are heavier, and I didn't really understand earlier, the first times I had port, how you're supposed to drink it or why you should drink it. And I always assumed you were supposed to drink it with a cigar, and I didn't really understand why you were supposed to do that.
I was going to ask Oscar what he thinks, and we got kind of sidetracked. I was actually thinking, ask this question, what he thinks the number one misperception is about port. And I didn't get to that. What do you think it is?
The cigar connection is part of it.
Yeah.
And then two, I think people traditionally think of it as something you drink after dinner.
It seems like he was trying to address those two things as we talked to him. So I think you're probably right. If we had asked him, that would probably be similar, because those are the two themes he kind of got on. He stressed was that, one, you could have some people have it as an aperitif, the French, and others, you know, have it after. But it could be either way or alone.
Well, and also it was kind of a sexist beverage. I mean, what would happen is you would have dinner. The men and women would be together at a formal dinner. The women would retire to another room. The men would retire then to their room. And the men would then drink port and smoke cigars and then talk.
Of course.
So it was I think there's a little bit of that still in kind of in the cultural mindset, where people kind of think of port, oh yeah, that's something the guys do by themselves when they're drinking their cigar, smoking their cigars and drinking their port. So that's sort of it's an old world, old tradition type of thing that it's not the way it is anymore. It's all different now.
No, that I think you're right. Traditionally, anyway, in the United States, what has been your experience with port being served at any occasion? What occasions were you at when it was served? When you go into your wine rooms, your tasting rooms, do you see it offered? You know, is it made here? I mean, what's going on with it?
So, as Oscar mentioned, because of the laws, the modern laws, port, you can only call a wine port if it's from Portugal and from the Porto region along that Douro River Valley. That's the only those wines made in that particular style can really, by law, be called port. Now, because a lot of American wineries, or several American wineries, were making a port style wine, and because people understood the style and the name with port, and what they were getting, there are some wineries that are allowed in the U.S. to call their wine port, even though technically it is not port because it's not from Portugal. So when you go to a winery or you go to a nice dinner and you see port on the list, sometimes it's not really port. It's an American wine made in a port style. And because it's an American wine made in a port style, we don't necessarily have to use the grapes that they used in Portugal. You know, it may be completely, totally different grapes than the Portuguese would use, but because it was made in the U.S., and they've been making it that way for a number of years, they call it a port.
Okay, so what has been your experience? Okay, my experience with port has been, I honestly can't think of an experience with port. I'm really, that I haven't done myself, that I haven't had, haven't had port, and I've always bought it from Portugal. I don't think I've ever bought anything American made.
So I have enjoyed some American-made ruby-style ports, that younger, fresher, juicier, vibrant 18 to 19% alcohol fortified wine made with the distilled spirit. So I have enjoyed some Washington port-style wines like that.
And how do they compare?
Some of them are pretty darn good.
Okay.
You know, but you need to bear in mind that it's not a true port. You know, if you drink a fortified wine made from Syrah and it's called a Syrah port, you have to understand that it's an American expression inspired by an older tradition from Portugal.
Okay. You know, and now that you say that, I think I have had something from Niprath Winery here in Spokane that was done in a port style. So I'll have to go look at those. I think I might still have a bottle of it put away. I'm pretty sure they did use that terminology.
Right. And one of the local wineries for me is Barnard Griffin. And I don't know, for quite a while, he's been making what he calls a Syrah port.
Okay. So are you interested in knowing the calories now?
Okay.
Before we get into tasting it.
All right. Yes,
I think I should tell you before you taste it, right? So you know how many sips you can have and how hard you have to work afterwards to work it off. Okay. So a glass of Cabernet, a 5-ounce pour. How much would that be in your wine glass if you poured 5 ounces of Cabernet?
It depends on the shape of the glass.
One of these big red wine glasses.
So I have a standard size wine glass. So
we use the same, the Riedel's, right?
Yeah, we do like a at the wineries we do like a 4 ounce pour.
What? That's the tasting?
No, I mean for like if you want to buy a glass.
Oh, okay, got it. Whew,
so just you know a nice pour without you're not supposed to fill the glass. So a little less than half full would be about 4 ounces. 5 ounces is probably getting close to probably right around half full.
So that's a big pour.
It's healthy.
Yeah, and how many ounces are in a bottle?
25.36 fluid ounces, U.S.
Okay, so that's – we usually figure 5 glasses per bottle. So that's a pretty standard glass of wine, right?
Yeah, that would be standard.
All right. So Cabernet, 5 ounces. What would you guess that at?
Let's see.
Da, da, 160. Da, da, da. 160, I heard you. 122.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Port – a 5 ounce glass, which you wouldn't drink a 5 ounce glass of port.
No, I would
first
not.
Of all. Okay.
I wouldn't.
At 20% alcohol per volume, 235.
Ooh.
Okay. So not quite double, but almost double. But the thing is, it's such a powerful drink. You would never, ever drink that much of it. You're more likely to drink what? 2 ounces?
I would probably pour 1 to 2 ounces, depending on the company and depending on what I was pairing it with.
Okay, and 2 ounces is only 94 calories.
That sounds reasonable to me.
That's less than a candy bar, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I feel really good about it now. Let's drink more. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers. Actually, I'm going to while we're talking, I have the Quevedo 10-year-old port, which is a tawny style port.
Okay.
I'm gonna pour some. It has a pretty brown color. It's actually kind of dark.
Tawny style port, which means it was aged in a barrel, French oak in this case,
mm-hmm.
which lends its browner color. Now,
yeah, their notes say that it was from a selection of ports from different ages, some few decades old, aged in their cellar, and then they blend it together to create a smooth, balanced port wine.
What's interesting to me about the tawny versus ruby, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, ruby is very popular. And the purpose for fortifying it in the first place was to stabilize it for the journey. And I'm wondering, is that because they were sloshing around on the river? Because there were a lot of rapids and things they had to go through.
Well, they were shipping it over the ocean. And so the seas are really rough, and there's salt water everywhere. And a more delicate wine would be spoiled.
Just because of all the sloshing around?
The sloshing, the change in temperatures, cold and hot, heat of the day, and then that saltwater air, and then the saltwater sloshing around inside the ship itself. And by fortifying it, they stabilized it with all that sugar, and it was more resilient. And then people decided, hey, this tastes pretty good. So what they did is they started upping up the amount of brandy that they added to it till they found the perfect ratio of, you know, ripe wine to the distilled spirits, where you get that 20% alcohol, approximately 20% alcohol once it's all done.
Which, of course, has to be a wine spirit of some sort. I think within Portugal they did do some transportation on the rivers, because I did read that it was transported down a river to the cellars of Vila Nova de Gaia, just across from Porto, on these flat-bottom vessels called Barcos Rebolos, mm-hmm. for many years, up until the 20th century. And so this wine had to undergo, and I guess no wine could probably live up to that, a treacherous journey to get to England.
Well, you know, us wine snobs, we're really careful with our bottles of wine, how we treat them, how we store them in a dark space, in a controlled temperature environment with minimal vibration. You know, we're really careful with the wine. And you can only imagine what it was like in the day 300 years ago when they're transporting wine in casks, and probably not very gently.
No. And so when it got to England, of course, then they were wanting it to be as much like wine in the beginning anyway, before they understood they really liked that idea of port. As they could, so they wanted to keep that color of a wine. So I guess that's probably why the rubies were so popular.
And the rubies will age, and they will start to lose some of that deep ruby color and fade a little bit in color over time. Although I've never had a vintage ruby. That would be something to do.
Put that on your New Year's resolution. So now you're right now you're drinking the tawny, and what does the color look like?
It's a real pretty. It almost looks like coffee. It's the real pretty brown. It does to me. It looks like almost like a cup of Yuban or Sanka.
I will tell you that's the best port I've ever had in my life. Is the Cavedo tawny that we had?
It's for me. It was all about the finish. The finish was so smooth and flavorful and long with the ruby and with the tawny both. And especially with the tawny, I kept waiting because I've had I went through a port phase maybe 15 years ago, and I was buying this just the stuff I could find off the shelf in the local grocery store. And they always had this kind of bitterness on the finish.
Yes.
And this one does not.
No.
And every time I have a taste of it, I'm waiting for that bitterness to hit,
none.
And it never does.
None. It
come
is
and have a taste.
Smooth. It's balanced. It's complex. I served this to quite a few friends over the holidays, and it changed their ideas about port as well.
I also shared this wine with friends the week before Christmas, and everyone was surprised, first of all, that they liked it, and then secondly, how much they liked it. They all really enjoyed the port, and I was watching for their reaction. My expectation was, because none of them drink this style of wine, they all loved it, and they were all like, where can I get that?
Well, you know, I think there's been a real resurgence of things like artisan hard ciders, artisan beer, artisan whiskeys, you know, everything. What I haven't really seen yet happen is those little boutique port shops. I haven't really seen that happen, but I could foresee it happening, couldn't you? That there'd be a real port explosion in the United States that has not happened here.
I think it depends how much of a sweet tooth you have. I think that's part of it, because this is definitely sweet as you taste it, and then sweet as it finishes. And you know, this would be something that would be lovely with traditionally something with like a strong cheese. So I could, like, we have a really nice cheese shop here in town, and they pour wines. And this would be lovely with a nice, like a blue cheese or a Stilton, something that has a lot of funk to it and that is very savory and salty. You match it with a sweet wine. Oh, I think you're going to have some fans right there.
That was a good point that when you were talking to Oscar, and I hadn't thought about that, but so many wines do not stand up to those hard cheeses that we all love. You know, the Cambolas and all those kind of Cambazolas and the blues. And so when you... You still want your wine with it, but you know it overpowers the tongue. But this port, you're right; it would be a perfect balance to that.
Oh, it'd be wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And you know, a little hedonistic. It's not something that you'd probably do every night, but you know, we're special friends or a special date. I mean, I could, or a special occasion. I could easily see doing that.
Absolutely. So. Now, I'd read too in this whole idea, this whole port month that we've had, that the phylloxera infestation was from the United States. It came in from the United States. I hadn't realized that before. I knew that a lot of Europe had been devastated by phylloxera, but I had no idea we were the cause of that, or the New World was the cause of that.
Well, it was the New World vines. They're different from the Old World vines, and the New World vines had adapted and are resistant to phylloxera. And of course, vines from Europe were brought to the New World to try to find a way to plant and grow them. And then, of course, the vines that they found in the New World, along with everything else, was taken over to Europe and the Old World. And that's when they eventually found out that they had a problem.
And it wiped out a lot of their vineyards. And so Portugal in particular was devastated, and a lot of the farmers gave up, and then the English took over some of those vineyards and waited for there to be a cure, you know, something brought in the late 1800s, I guess, the turn of the century. And about 1890, sure enough, they invented because they grafted together the American vine stock, a root stock, with the European, and they made a phylloxera resistant root stock, and that's what everything now is grown from.
it what a scary time to be a winemaker or to be a grower. Yeah, just a really terrifying time. And a lot of people were thought that it was over, that vinifera was going to be history and we would no longer be making wine from grapes. It was a scary time.
You know, another interesting thing during the research phase was that the English really loved the Bordeaux wines from France, and they had a real taste for the big, full-bodied reds like we do here in Washington State. That surprised mm-hmm. me. I mean, they weren't comparing it in the history that I was reading, but that's how we are. We really like those robust red wines. And so when they first started getting the Portuguese wines, and they were from all over the country of Portugal, some of them were very weak compared to the Bordeaux wines. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they focused in on the Douro Valley, is because they were producing the most full-bodied reds.
Right, and that's the northern portion of Portugal. Ah. And that is the sweet spot up north.
Okay.
And you're really close to France.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I should get a map out and take a look. How close are you? Is that on the border?
It's when you look at the map, it looks pretty darn close. Well, actually, it does look really close. Looking at my little map, it looks like you're about 50 miles.
50 from, miles.
Yeah, from the Douro River. Oporto itself is probably closer to 100 miles, because Oporto is on the port right along the Atlantic Ocean. That looks like about 100 miles from Oporto.
All right, so what's going on now with the port that you're drinking, the tawny?
A really nice finish. You know, it's kind of nutty. And I was getting like dried fig.
Okay.
I'm getting some barrel. You get some kind of that oaky barrelness on the kind of on the outside on the aromas. Really smooth.
Now I got out of it caramel.
Caramel and getting some coffee too. There's like a dusting of coffee. Mm-hmm. Maybe a touch of cinnamon. So Oscar invited us to Portugal. Love to go. I just have this image of sitting and looking out over the vineyards rolling down the hill down to the Douro River and sipping this wine and having like a plate with some nuts and some nice strong cheese and a little fire going.
Oh, nice.
Just now, that was all
you
in my
can
head.
You dream, can't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to go.
And I did read, too, that the English still love to vacation in Portugal, but it's not so much and drink the wine, but it's not so much an American destination spot yet.
Well, you know, when we did the Portuguese wine tasting last year, mm-hmm. The winery has facilities for tourists to stay. And, you know, doing a little research along the Douro River, which is very steep, where all the vineyards are planted, a lot of those wineries are set up with accommodations for tourists. And until then, I had never considered, going to a winery in Portugal and staying there and then, you know, traveling up and down the river. But to me, it sounds like it would be a wonderful destination.
Absolutely. It's apparently one of the favorite for the English. So tell us a little bit about the Ruby now.
Okay, so the Ruby, my bottle is empty. It emptied rapidly, I should say. Mm-hmm. It was really good and beautiful red plum color. And on the nose, I was getting like cherry compote and stewed plums, a little minty clove. And then in the mouth, it was just really luxurious in the mouth with raspberry preserve, dried cherry and plum, a little black tea, some mint, some chocolate, a good weight and mouth feel in the mouth. It didn't seem overly sweet. I mean, it was sweet, but not overly sweet. And it just had a really lovely, tasty finish. And as it had a little more air, it became a little more expressive. And as Oscar mentioned, the rubies drink within 2 weeks. They do shift a little bit more the longer that they're open. And so, like I said, my wine did not last very long. And mm-hmm. on the second day, I was getting have you ever had that Market Spice tea from Seattle Pike Place Market?
Mm-mm.
So I was getting like orange spice tea added to the flavor profile on the second day. I think for me, the Ruby is definitely my speed. It's real easy to understand. And the nice thing that I like about the Ruby ports is they really match with savory foods like roast beef or a steak or a beef shepherd's pie, or even lamb, like a leg of lamb. So for me, the Ruby port is more flexible. It's not something where I would say, oh, that has to be after dinner. I would say, well, look, at dinner, it's going to be that, you know, beef roast, and that would be a perfect match to that wine.
Yes. It's definitely, it was seemed to be more robust, not more flavorful, but more robust at the beginning, on the front end, than the tawny.
It's certainly more fruit forward.
Fruit forward, that's a better word, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the tawny has that, when you taste the tawny, it sort of tastes older, because you're not getting that bright fruit up front. You're getting more of the aged flavors and more kind of the oak component flavors. Mm-hmm. Whereas with that Ruby, the Cavedo LBV 2006 is the one that we had. It's definitely, you know, you start thinking this tastes like kind of, I'm getting red wine characteristics with it, like the cherry and the raspberry and the chocolate.
So the Ruby, you're thinking, you know, you've mentioned all, you know, main entree courses. And so the tawny, you were talking more about aperitif cheeses and mm-hmm. fruits and those kinds of things. So you were kind of thinking along the lines, I guess this was an accidental thing, but inspired by what you're drinking, of one being more of an aperitif and one being more of a main course.
I think so. And I think that's part of the cultural shift that we're starting to experience here in the United States, where instead of thinking, oh, that's a dessert wine, or that's a, you know, after dinner wine, or that's a cigar wine, it's like, well, this wine does kind of fit sort of after dinner or with the cheeses, whereas this other wine is actually very suitable to go with some nice, hearty, savory dishes.
Well, I tell you what, if a wine can hold up against a cigar, then that right. tells you it can hold up against anything.
Well, yeah, that tells volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So the, you know, heavy cheeses is not a surprise then.
Yes. Yeah. I, both of these wines were lovely. And both of these wines, for me, were kind of eye-openers as far as maybe I need to start, you know, looking a little closer to what my options are for port. And, you know, Oscar said that we could buy these wines from Flickinger Wines. Mm-hmm. And I checked their prices, and in general, the prices seem very reasonable to me.
Yeah, these were under $30 a bottle.
They were.
I can't remember. I looked them up at 1.2, and I can't remember the exact price. Do you remember?
Those the tawny, the 10-year tawny port is listed at $22. Mm-hmm. And the 2006 late bottled vintage port is listed at $20.
That's cheap.
Those are... Now, they do have more expensive bottles of wine, but, you know, this a tremendous value, I think.
Well, yeah, because you get so much. Well, they're so good. They're superior to any port I've ever had. But also, just you get such an experience. The flavor is so bold, and it's you could go out and buy a $20 bottle of just your standard wine and get really low quality. I don't even know how they... I've always wondered how they do it and then get it here to the United States, export it and everything for the prices that we then have to pay. It seems minimal for what you yeah. get, especially the tawny. It can be because you're only going to get a 2-ounce serving and you're going to be satisfied, 2 to 3 ounce serving. And then you're going to be able to put that away for a long time.
So right,
keep
so
pulling it out.
Right. So like Oscar mentioned, the tawny can hold up for a month easily. And my bottle's been open 3 weeks.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, are these ever mixed with any kind of a mixed drink or used in any kind of a, you know, recipe? Do you use them at all, ports, for cooking?
I use Madeira.
Okay.
And Madeira is a Portuguese wine.
I could think that these would be really good as, you know, a sauce, a base for a sauce to pour over meat.
I agree.
In fact, you might just pour it over the meat.
You could do that.
Or over ice cream? I mean, some of the...
You could do that too, sure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And as far as, you know, drink recipes, there are recipes for any number of combinations of beverages. I'm pretty sure there are some port-based recipes for beverages. Hmm. I'm a little old school as far as certain beverages, so I would just drink it as it is. Now, what has changed is... I no longer look for the smallest glass I have in the pantry or in the cabinet for my port.
Oh.
I just use the standard red wine glass. Or if I'm feeling leisurely and the fireplace is going, I'll look for a brandy snifter.
So you want to get a good nose on it.
I do.
Yeah, I've been pouring it into the small glasses, and I think I need to rethink that because, yeah, you're not getting a good nose with these small glasses.
You know, if that's all you have, that's fine, but I really like the bigger glass. I like swirling it around, and I stick my nose as far as it'll go into the glass and inhale deeply. I do that all the time.
So the brandy glass.
That works great. Snifter, a nice size, not the little tiny ones, but a nice handful size. And then you can hold it in your hand, warm up a little bit, and warming it will also start to release a little more aroma. I was at the local winery when they were making their port-styled wine, and the assistant winemaker brought out just after they had added the distilled spirits to the wine, because that stops the fermentation process. It preserves the sugar in the wine, mm-hmm. which is why you have the sweetness. And he brought out this glass of this pale pink stuff, and he says, "Here, try this." And I go, "What is that?" He goes, "That's our port style wine. We just added the distilled spirits to it. We've stopped fermentation, and it was nasty. It was terrible." But my appreciation for the skill of the winemaker was increased that day, mm-hmm. because how you get that, and then how you get what's in the bottle, that ruby style port that's so delicious and sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was mind boggling just the chemistry involved to know that, you know, this is when we do it. And even though it looks like that, we're going to make it even better in another year or two.
Mm. Well, William, we're coming to the end of our show, so let's go ahead and wrap it all up. Get ready for next month and third Thursday. We haven't chose our wine of the month yet, but we will be putting it on the show pages. And we'll try to work out our schedule for the whole entire year. We'll be doing things a little bit different. We're not necessarily going around the world anymore. We did today. We went to Portugal. But we're going to have a focus just on wine and wine themes. We definitely want to look at barrels. We want to look at corks. We want to look at some of the nuts and bolts of mm-hmm. winemaking mm-hmm. And those other things that don't come to the forefront as much as they should, even the stainless you were talking about and manufacturing.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll be looking at all the aspects of winemaking, and we'll be kind of jumping around, being a little more here in our country a little bit more this year.
And there are a number of events coming up this year I'd like to mention when they're right around the corner. Red Wine and Chocolate is coming up for February. So a lot of Washington wineries will have special Valentine's weekend chocolate and food pairing suggestions.
Nice. All right, William. Well, here's to good port and enjoying good port with good friends.
And a big thank you and cheers to Porto Quevedo in Portugal.
Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.